Well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Persuasion by the Pint. I'm Jonathan Taylor, along with...
Sean, where's my swipe file, McCool?
I love it. I love it. Where's my swipe file? Dude, you should have said... It should have been Sean, dude, where's my swipe file, McCool?
Yeah. That would have been good. Oh, well. Lost the chance. It's over now.
So that's a little hint to our discussion today. We're going to talk about a little loss, some swipe files, specifically one sales letter. We're gonna dissect a $1 billion sales letter by someone many of our listeners will be quite familiar with. And
here's a hint: it's a prince of a sales letter.
There you go. Oh, you've given too much away. That's too much. Huh?
I don't know. We'll see. Who knows their direct response history?
That's right. Yeah.
I'm sure there's a crop of youngins that don't know the Prince reference.
You're probably right.
Not Prince, but...
not Purple Rain Prince. We're talking
different Prince.
But yeah, it should be good. We had a guest lined up today. She had to reschedule. She'll be on next Friday. I'm excited about that.
Did you see... couple lines near the end of her email that she added.
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Like the switch in her industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was like, ooh,
that's going to be interesting to talk about. Yeah, I know. I thought that interesting myself.
Yeah. So we'll just leave that laying there as a tease for next episode. But It'll be good. It'll be some insider information, which is always fun.
Yes. All right. Well, hopefully we've got some good ones to review. I saw you on Facebook. You had three beautiful brews lined up for some upcoming episodes. So I'm anxious to see what you've selected.
Literally, when I was in the store last night, I was like skipping down the beer aisle because I was singing.
Yeah.
It's the most wonderful time.
Oh, yes.
Of the year. Because I was like, this is when the good beers are out.
It's nonstop.
I was wanting to pile stuff in my cart, and I was like, ooh, settle down. We'll get three or four at a time.
The fourth quarter of every year is the best brew time ever.
Absolutely. So I even put that on my Instagram story with that song in the background, just a little clip of it. So,
good stuff.
Got some people agreeing with me, too. So
by the way, I just want to mention to our listeners, if you're wondering where the heck am I? So this is normally my desk right there. You see the back of my iMac is usually what I record from. Yeah. However, as I was telling Sean, walked into my office today and my 8-year-old iMac had given up the ghost. Kaput. Graphics card gone. Burned, incinerated. So,
wow.
So yeah,
all that video editing, I guess. Something,
fried it.
I don't
know. Fried it. So guess what? What happens when that when something like that takes place? You have no choice but to go to Apple, and they just drain you of another
$1,000.
they just open your bank account, and it's like a vacuum.
Do you remember how Dan Kennedy used to say that people could just leave their card on file and anything he opened up?
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
You might as well do that with Apple.
Pretty much.
You know, once you get in their world, it's hard to.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You're in the, what is it like the ping pong? It's like a ping pong table or not a ping pong, but what is it?
I have no idea where you're going with this one.
That's something.
You're on your own.
Before arcade games, we played pinball. Yeah. It's like a pinball. You're just bouncing around their world, man, back and forth.
Pinball. Yeah, that was a tough one.
I was like, is that really a pinball? Pinball? Yeah. Did people used to play that?
It's like, yeah, I've forgotten what it is.
All right. Well, enough bantering back and forth. We got some brews, man.
We do.
What do we got?
I'm going to go first.
I'm going to let you go.
All right. So here I've got, this is a regular brewer that we have on the show. So this is a 903 Brewers. Coffee cake is for closers stout.
Ooh, I love it.
That's the name.
That's a little Glengarry reference there, you know?
Yeah, it is. A little persuasion reference.
Love it.
So the copy's pretty good too. It says, close the deal or just the day with this stout inspired by scrumptious coffee cake. Our Imperial Stout is loaded with flavors of brown sugar, cinnamon, vanilla, and coffee. The result is a rich but balanced beer with bold coffee roast, sweet supporting layers, and intriguing spice. Put it down? Nah, pick it up. 8.2% by volume. Pairs with apple and cheddar grilled cheese, which sounds amazing.
Oh, man.
Old-fashioned pies, which also sounds amazing. And a positive work environment.
Wow. I
like that last one.
So. Positive work. Always. Always.
Yeah. So, yeah. It's
What kind of grilled cheese was that? You went...
Apple and cheddar grilled cheese.
Apple and cheddar grilled cheese. Boy, that sounds really good.
I always put a piece of fruit on my grilled cheese sandwiches.
Do you really? You know what? It sounds really good because you get the little bit of the salty and the sweet and the salty. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just take an apple slice, slice it, and you fry it up a little bit before you put the bread in the pan just to release some of the sugars and things like that. And you just layer them on,
Sounds amazing.
It just makes a whole different experience. Much more kind of uppity. Very much more culinary, I guess. So.
Sounds incredible. Right. I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah. And if you use donuts, day-old donuts, bread, it's even better.
The key there, day-old, they've got to be a little stale-ish.
If they're too fresh, they're just too soft.
Yeah, right.
And you got to flip the donut. You got to cut it like a bagel and flip it inside out. So the inside becomes the outside.
That sounds really good too.
It's a lot. There's a picture on my Instagram if anybody wants to really tackle that.
Okay.
All right.
So Where can people find that, Sean?
Coach Sean McCool.
Coach Sean McCool. Look at that. Ooh.
Nice and dark. Camera is on point today on my end. I don't know if it just seems to be working better.
Yeah, your color looks... Your color looks great.
I did some settings on the old eyeglasses camera I told you about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's
got a sharpness
setting so I can play with the sharpness.
All right. So what do I have? I have a cold brew coffee pumpkin nitro.
Oh, yeah.
So.
It looks Starbucks-y, but it's not.
It does look star. The logo, Southern Tier Brewing Company.
My brain was like, wait, it doesn't say Starbucks, but it looks like Starbucks. I don't know what. And they have a nitro can that looks similar to that.
Mm-hmm.
But not beer.
I think they did that on purpose.
Probably so.
They could be getting a cease and desist soon because they get the coffee beans on the side.
It's different enough that I don't think anybody could stop them. But I like nitro.
Yeah.
So you got to hold it up to the can.
Sound. I jumped it.
To the mic.
Did you hear that? Was that really?
I did hear it.
So it says, meet Cold Brew Coffee Nitro, the newest member of the Pumpkin family. Taste pumpkin combined with the smooth cold brew coffee. Nitro adds another layer to the liquid for a decadent and sensational experience. This is... I think it's 8.5. Let's see.
We're right in the 8.6.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're in the same range there.
Ooh, it's frothy. Very frothy. Yeah.
Well, it has got that nitro going on.
Yeah.
It may take a little while to settle down.
So let's see. Let me hold it up and we switch over the.
Oh, it's a lot lighter than I thought it would be.
Yeah. Yeah. Because
it's an ale.
It's an Imperial Pumpkin Ale. Imperial Ale.
Nice. All right. Well,
cheers.
Cheers.
Okay. I'm about to sneeze. Ooh. Wait.
All right.
I have a sneeze button on this, so I have to push my sneeze button.
There you go.
Maybe the nitro made me sneeze. I'm not sure. How do they do the nitro thing again? Is that where they pump some nitrous?
There's a capsule in the bottom.
Okay.
That once the air hits it, it activates or something. I don't know exactly how it works, but We should have a nitro capsule expert on.
It does. The foam or the head is, it's much more, like I said, frothy. It's, you can, the bubbles are frothy, fine bubbles.
Yeah, the bubbles are smaller, finer than regular, the regular head of a regular beer.
This is amazing. I got to tell you.
Really?
I wasn't so sure about the pumpkin.
Imperial ales are good. I mean, I'm, you know.
This is like absolutely ales. Amazing.
Hmm. Good. I'm a little torn. I don't taste the coffee cake. I taste the coffee and some of the other stuff, but I don't taste like the, it's a little richer than I was expecting. You know, coffee cake is not like chocolate cake. It's not as rich.
Right, right.
So I would, and at 8.2%, I was expecting it to be a little less rich. Mm-hmm. With that said, it's not bad at all. It's actually pretty good.
All right.
By the way, this brewer, next time you're in Dallas, is up in Sherman, Texas. Just
Sherman.
North of Dallas.
I don't like Sherman. So. Come on, man. We're Georgia guys. We're not big.
Go.
That was a long time ago. All right. Okay. We'll move on. All right. Let's give, what's our rating?
I'm going to give this a 3.9. It's not quite in the 4 to 5 range. So I'm going to give it a 3.9.
Good, a 3.9.
But not amazing. Didn't give me the same response that you got drinking yours. You're already half done with yours.
This is so smooth, man. And I think it's the nitro. You know, the nitro, I mean, this is the head on it just makes it really smooth. I'm going to have to do it, Sean. I'm going to have to do it.
Here it comes.
I'm giving this one a 5-0. 5-0. Wow. This is a 5-0 if I've ever tasted 5-0. A 5-0.
Very nice. I'm going to have to go. What's the brewer again?
Southern Tier.
Well, yeah, that's half of it right there.
Look at this. Look at the back of the can.
Pumpkin Imperial.
Imperial Ale. Nitro. Yeah, nitro. I was, like I said, I was, and it's not that my expectations were so low. This is
Did you get
truly,
that from Total Wine or did you get it at the local establishment?
The local establishment.
Wow. They must be buying stuff just for you now.
They are. It's a new edition.
Yeah.
Just came out this week. I saw it and I grabbed it.
Well, good choice.
I love it. I'm going to have to go just in case because there was only one other box after I grabbed this one. I might have to swing back by on my way home and take the other one. It's only $15. Come on.
Yeah. Oh, I saw a single can last night when I was looking at stuff. I was like, oh, that looks really, it was really high-end looking can. It was $16.99 for one can.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, oh, can't do it.
Imperial Stout, was it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Russian Imperial Stout. Yeah.
Probably. So, all right. Well, let's get on with the show. That's what everybody else is thinking.
Yeah. Can you please? I got to say, though, just as a good transition to our topic today. So what I'm holding, I thought, man, you know what? I'm going to hold these up because this is a great segue into our topic today. So I was at a trade show a couple of weeks ago, and I like I like to go to trade shows and take all their marketing literature, like all their all their one sheets and their little marketing portfolio folders and their marketing copy. And
you should. Somebody worked hard on that.
Absolutely. And somebody spent a lot of money on, I mean, some of the graphics and the you know, the quality of the printing and everything is good and everything. But the one thing that I always, it baffles my mind when you go to these shows. Well, it shouldn't, because I've done this for years, is that there's no direct response.
No call to action.
Yeah, absolutely. Nothing in terms of good sales copy. Here's an example. Here's a prime example. Here is a company that says, make the right choice. Choose the best industries products to meet your quality and time requirements. blah, 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 blah.
Make the right choice. That is great advice. That is really good
Make the
advice.
Right choice, right? Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's see if I can find another. Let's see. It says here. Here's another product.
This is what we call duck-billed platitudes.
Surface coating for high-performance composites. World-class coating technologies.
That reminds me of, what was it, Elf, when he sees the sign with world's greatest coffee. You did it! Yeah. Congratulations.
Congratulations, yeah. Yes.
That's amazing.
So again, not making fun of these, because they put a lot of money into it, but we kind of are poking fun of it a little. Here's one last one that I want to look at. At the bottom, they say, we at such and such company, because I'm not going to blow their lid, we at such and such company have developed simple formulas and processes which will greatly enhance aesthetics and physical properties. Where's my here, how about this one?
You've heard me talk about
that's a wrong that was my ad button.
Oh, your wrong show.
There we go. Still the wrong one. But no, I mean, this is just too sad. I mean, these are people in the sales department and marketing department that say.
And how big would you say, for our listeners, how big would you say those companies are? These are not.
Oh no, these are companies. These are significant. So, I mean, they're not Fortune 500, obviously, but they're these are companies that do millions. These are $10 million plus at least companies. Probably more along the lines of $20 million plus companies.
And let that be a lesson to our listeners, because if they can get to $10, $20, $30 million without the stuff we teach on this podcast, without the stuff we share on this podcast, imagine what you could do.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah. And even to this day, people don't know about a lot of the stuff we talk about.
Yeah.
They just don't know.
A good a good copywriter, they could just make a living out of going to these trade shows and just showing up and just say, hey, can I help you out a little?
Well, I mean, I have made a living.
I mean,
one niche, yep. One small niche, and yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, really with one or two companies, you know,
right. 'Cause absolutely.
And they're like, oh. Yeah, it's amazing to me still. So
it's funny though, all the young copywriters out there today, they want to do everything online, right? And
they want to go after the big niches, financial and health and this stuff. And like, there's a world of B2B out there.
Yes.
That will pay well and the bar is low.
Yeah. Like
you can put the basic stuff in, stuff we're going to talk about today. You can use that. You can swipe the stuff we're going to talk about today almost word for word. Mm-hmm. Just change it to reflect the industry and it will work because I've done it.
Absolutely. Like
I've literally taken classic ads in an industrial type niche and it worked well.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So,
well, we've talked about some of your ads to some industrial companies, the Granite Industry, that company. Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff that, you know, it's mom and some of these businesses are just not sexy. you know, they're not the sexiest thing, but they make a lot of money, you know? Yeah. You know, I work with a company now that, it's, if you look at their product line, it's as boring as all get out, but they sell a ton of it and to specific other chemical industries and other polymer and, you know, other composite and plastic businesses, this stuff is gold, you know? Yeah. But,
you say boring. I was listening to a TED talk. Or some video I was watching yesterday, and they were talking about purpose and things like this. And there was in it, they said, never loan money to somebody who's trying to make a living out of their purpose or trying to, you know, find their purpose.
That's so good.
They said, what you should do, if you want to loan money, loan to somebody who's doing something extremely boring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's where a lot of times the money is.
Absolutely.
Toilet paper.
Yep.
You know, bricks.
Mm-hmm.
Lumber, like the stuff that is not sexy that everybody needs, is where there's a lot of money to be. And you've seen a lot of entrepreneurs in the last, I think, 5 or 10 years, kind of, especially millennial entrepreneurs have gone into mattresses was a big one. Sheets, you know, all the household goods kind of got popular again. Mm-hmm. And you see those, a lot of those companies using more of a direct response model, even in some of the old stuff, instead of trying to sell courses and coaching and whatever else, you know. So,
well, case in point, this week I was at a plant in Nashville, in the Nashville area, and they're basically just a tile manufacturer. They make ceramic tile, but it's owned by an Italian business owner up in northern Italy, who's one of the richest Italian business owners in the whole country. You know, it, he invests in everyday companies that do boring things like tile and just regular everyday products like that. So, it's a lesson.
So what are we going to learn today? You texted me this afternoon. You said, hey, got an idea.
So. So I wanted to look at there's a classic Gary Halbert ad. Okay. I just gave away the name.
We're well into the show. I think we can do that. Who's known as the Prince of Print. So that was a hint earlier. Prince. If you didn't know.
The Prince of Print.
That's right.
So I got this, and I'm going to give credit where credit's due, because I'm on a I'm on an email list by a guy. He's one that I bought the those swipe files, all of the swipe file letters, and it's over at copylegends.com. So I want to give him credit. You can go visit him. He's got a lot of great stuff over there. But it's Matt, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. Bakkenstedt.
No idea.
Sorry, Matt. I'm probably butchering your last name, but just go to copylegends.com, and that's probably the best way you can learn more and get on his list, because it's worth it. He's got, you know, some people you get on their list and it's just, they're always pitching. Well, this guy he gives a lot of value if you join his list, because he gives you a lot of great lessons that you can learn. And obviously I bought several of his swipe file products that have successful copywriters like Gary Halbert and, several others that are just, it's a culmination of so many in their most famous ads that you don't have to go, you know, sifting through a metal file drawer to find, but you can just pull them up digitally and kind of pull some takeaways from those. But this one, he talked about one of the greatest Gary Halbert sales letters ever written. And he spent some time, he actually sent a link to it. And I actually went through it, because there's some takeaways that he, and we might have some of our own takeaways, Sean, but there's some things that he points out that we can mention and obviously give him credit. But then there's probably some other things that we want to analyze on this as well. And it is it is his famous coat of arms letter. And I'm sure you recall that one.
I do. So for the young'uns out there,
the young'uns
that may not be familiar, what is a coat of arms?
Yeah, so
I guess that's not age dependent, but so basically Gary Halbert he came up with this idea to sell the emblems from family names.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right. Yep. And now kind of a knockoff of that now is every once in a while, especially around St. Patrick's Day, I'll see ads in my feed that have t-shirts with like McCool on it.
Right.
And, you know, mugs and all this kind of stuff that are targeted directly to me or anyone with the name McCool, I guess. But
and why is that so McCool?
Anything personalized is going to get your attention.
Absolutely. What's the most, we've talked about this in the past, the most popular name in the English language is your own name. The most popular word in the English language is your own name. So people love to hear their name.
This letter, I don't want to steal your thunder, but
it
was mailed for 30 years to more than 600 million people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time and a lot of people.
That's a lot of orders.
I mean, you're over half a billion people, and our brains don't really understand numbers like that. I saw a great little graphic yesterday, and it said 1 million seconds equals 11 days.
Mm-hmm.
But 1 billion seconds is 31 and a half years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the difference between, you know, 1 million and 600 million is a, you know, it's a big difference.
Like, oh yeah.
It's hard for us to even comprehend. That's, you know, that's more people than there is in the US, and especially back then.
Sure. Let's see. Do you want, I've got it pulled up so I can screen share it.
I've got it.
Oh, you got too, it? Okay.
But yeah. Screen share it for the folks.
All right. Let's see here. Share. I'm using my laptop and it's asking me to download something for it. Can you do it? Let's see.
Yeah, I've got a, it's from a different page, but I've got it.
Bear with us, folks.
Can you see that?
Yep. I can.
All right. I can no longer see you, so.
Oh, that's fine.
Your head. Here, I can move. Let me move my StreamYard over here real quick so I can see what's going on the other monitor. You're still seeing, yeah.
So the first right. thing that I noticed when I looked at this letter, because it'd been years since I heard about, I mean, it's, I remember this letter, but it's been a long time. And so the first thing that I noticed when I went through the letter, it's not written from Gary Halbert's perspective. Mm-hmm. It's written from Nancy Halbert, his wife.
Yeah.
and there's a reason for that. So, and we'll get into that here in a second. But the first thing, you look at it, it's very simple letter, very personalized. But what's one of the first things you know at the top there, Sean?
Yeah, it's got a return address and phone number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he, if you notice the, 5687 Ira Road, Bath, Ohio. Have you mm-hmm. ever heard of Bath, Ohio?
I have not.
So this is interesting. It's something I didn't realize. Gary had, he rented a small house in the small city of Bath, Ohio, with a population of just 9,500 people, which he chose as his central hub for this business. I guess when you make as much money off this letter, you can afford, I mean, you could rent a small house to send out your correspondence from.
Yeah. Was there a reason for that? Do you know, did they say?
He said, as it says, it's the central hub for this new business. And the letter was delivered to this address and taken to the post office. So it doesn't say specifically, but he chose this as his central location, I guess.
I wonder if it's because, I mean, literally this stuff was being carried to the mail, you know, to the post office.
Yep.
So I wonder if he thought it was centrally located in the U.S. so it would get to places in about the same time.
Yeah, I mean, quite possible. Yeah. Let's see, central hub. So he says each letter was postmarked from the same small, innocent city. I mean, that sounds like a, you know, Bath, Ohio sounds like a tiny little town. It doesn't sound like it's,
for sure,
you know, right in the middle of a metropolitan area.
Can you imagine a post office of that size?
Yeah.
Processing 600 million pieces of mail.
Yeah.
Going out, not to mention right. the ones coming back in. Because a lot came back in too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, which we'll talk about, I think. So
the other thing is it's not a main street or any kind of prominent street address mm-hmm. like that. I mean, Ira Road, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds very like specific and legitimate. Like, mm-hmm. oh, this is a somebody in some small town writing me.
Yep.
They've included their phone number.
Even, yeah, I was going to mention it. Yeah, even followed by the phone number, which makes it even more
personal. 666. I'm surprised I didn't cause a problem.
Yeah, that may have caused a little hesitancy with some people.
Yeah.
666. I don't know. But the next thing, very super personalized. Dear Mr. McDonald. So you start with the obvious question. How many people do you know that share your last name? If it's a common last name, Smith, Jones, that could be, I mean, that's a little different. But if you've got a unique last name like McCool, Dear Mr. McCool, I mean, I'm sure that would capture your attention there, Sean.
It does. And even if you're Smith, like if it comes to your mailbox, I mean, you assume that it's right and it's for you if the name matches, right? It's, you know, I mean, your name's Taylor. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, it's, it's not as common as Smith, but it's a fairly common name. So you're going to, it doesn't matter. Like if it's your name, it's your name.
Throughout this letter, not only does he use it in the opening, but he also uses it throughout the letter. You know, you look at the bottom half of the report, tells the story of a very old and distinguished family name of McDonald. The top half has a large and beautiful reproduction of the artist's drawing of the earliest known coat of arms for the name McDonald, right? I mean, this is all completely personalized throughout the letter.
This is like keyword stuffing with your name is what this is. Yeah,
exactly. I mean, this is what is easy to do now when you're using a mail or, email program or something like that where you can.
Yeah. And I'm amazed still, how few people on their emails will put the name anywhere besides the subject line or the dear line. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You know, they rarely drop it into the body copy.
Exactly.
I think some of that is because marketers have gotten, my personal opinion is I think marketers don't do it as often because they've seen enough names on their email list that are fake that they don't want to put it in there. Mm-hmm. But still, the majority of your names are probably legit, you know. But I think we get overly cynical as marketers, so we stop doing the basics
right. That
work because we're like, oh, I've seen, you know, whatever, and like, you know. So yeah. So should we read this letter real quick for those listening?
Yeah, because it's not very long. It's not a lengthy.
It's literally a one-page letter, mm-hmm. So it's not a 25-page, you know, long-form sales letter. Some other graphic things that, you know, still work to this day is indenting the first sentence of every paragraph. Mm-hmm. Most people don't do
that. You don't see that.
You can do that online. And
right.
It does still make it easier to read. So here's the letter. Dear Mr. McDonald, did you know that your family name was recorded with a coat of arms in ancient heraldic archives more than 7 centuries ago? My husband and I discovered this while doing some research for some friends of ours who have the same last name as you do. We've had an artist recreate the coat of arms exactly as described in the ancient records. This drawing, along with other information about the name, has been printed up into an attractive one-page report. The bottom half of this report tells the story of the very old and distinguished family name of McDonald. It tells what the name means, its origin, the original family motto, its place in history, and about famous people who share it. The top half has a large, beautiful reproduction of an artist's drawing of the earliest known coat of arms for the name of McDonald. This entire report is documented, authentic, and printed on parchment-like paper suitable for framing. The report so delighted our friends that we had a few extra copies made in order to share this information with other people of the same name. Framed, these reports make distinctive wall decorations, and they are great gifts for relatives. It should be remembered that we have not traced anyone's individual family tree, but have researched back through several centuries to find out about the earliest people named McDonald. All we are asking for them is enough to cover the added expense of having the extra copies printed and mailed. See below. If you are interested, please let us know right away as our supply is pretty slim. Just verify that we have your correct name and address and send the correct amount in cash or check for the number of reports you want. We'll send them promptly by return email. P.S. If you are ordering only one report, send $2. Additional reports ordered at the same time and sent to the same address are $1 each. Please make checks payable to me, Nancy L. Halbert. So this was in the 70s, I think, right?
Yep. That's
when this started.
Yep.
So
you had to slide a little check in the envelope.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted to mention on today's show. You think it's hard to get somebody to click a button? Like to get somebody to sit down and write out a check, mm-hmm. address an envelope, put the check in the envelope, find a stamp, put a stamp on it. That's why we still study mm-hmm. these old direct mail pieces.
Absolutely.
And old ads because if they worked back then, the amount of extra steps it took someone to go through mm-hmm. to place an order is much higher than it is today.
It is. It is. I mean, think like of all that work.
Physical action.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the fact that, I mean, I've heard stories that at one point they had 4, 5, 6 full-time people just to open the envelopes from the responses and to take the checks to the bank. Mm-hmm. There were so literally truckloads of mail were coming back from this letter.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it's It's insane.
It is. It is. And it's just, but you, I mean, some of the takeaways that we'll talk about, I mean, if you've listened to this, what Sean was reading, you probably, your copywriting spidey sense probably went off a few places, you know, yeah. in the letter that says, oh, I know what he's doing there. But let me start with the, because I find it interesting that he used, first of all, he did use his, as we said, he used his wife's name, which to my understanding, he didn't like his wife very much. But he certainly liked using her name in this letter. And there's a reason, a female voice coming from someone named Nancy instead of, you know, instead of Gary. I mean, there's a little more trust there. See, coming from Gary, your threat detector starts to go off, right? Someone Nancy, mm-hmm. someone with the name of Nancy sounds a little more innocent.
You know, even like my husband and I discovered this. Mm-hmm. There's something there. It's like, oh, here's a nice couple that's doing something together.
Yeah.
Right.
Sounds trusting.
And
were, yeah.
And they were doing it for some friends. Mm-hmm. Like that one sentence has a lot going on. My husband and I discovered this while doing some research for some friends of ours.
Yeah.
I mean that.
Yeah. That's kind of that tone is kind of a warm, you know, believable, welcoming type, you know?
And you just have to assume that a husband and wife working together for some friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a very nice gesture.
Sure.
So it builds that trust right up front in the second sentence. So the first sentence is a question that kind of stokes your curiosity, but that second sentence does a lot of rapport building in that second sentence.
Yep. Absolutely.
And then of course it ties in like they have, our friends have the same last name as you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now,
right.
We also know today this is not 100% true.
Right.
I guess they were doing research.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, for anybody that has, but not for friends with the same last name every time.
Yeah.
They ended up sending this out. I don't know how, like the origin story of this, I don't know how true that was from an origin story standpoint, mm-hmm. but this became so popular. They literally started mailing the phone book.
Yeah.
You know, cause they just substituted McDonald for every name in the phone.
Every name in the phone book. I mean, there's your list right there.
Yeah. Which I think is funny because one of the things that Gary Halbert is most known for is you got to find a starving crowd.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. Which is another way of saying you got to find a niche or mm-hmm. other things. Right. Mm-hmm. And his most successful letters or one of his most successful literally mailed to the phone book.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think that's funny. I find that very, like, there's nothing here that, this is a good example of like, you don't create desire.
Yeah.
Or you don't try to target something, you know, create something. The real emotion here was not getting a coat of arms. It's the, I guess, getting in touch with your past, the, what am I trying to think of? Like, what are people really buying here? I guess is my question to you, Jonathan. Like, what do you think people are really buying? They're not buying a coat of arms.
No, they're buying, I think most people are, they want to know their heritage and I guess mm-hmm. they're proud of that to some degree.
Yeah.
Of family, their origin.
If you have a name that, you know, maybe you haven't done anything special in your life. Mm-hmm. If you can trace back your name to something semi impressive looking and you can hang it on your wall, it kind of gives you some clout with friends and family that come over.
Sure.
All right. So I think what they're selling here is like pride.
Pride. Yeah.
Selling pride here.
So. Yeah. And getting back to your point on the finding a starving crowd, I mean, yeah, I think that's the right tactic. But in this case, he's selling kind of a low barrier of entry. I mean, it's a $2 report, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could never go out and be like, you know, do a search and like, let me find this starving crowd of people who want to buy a coat of arms.
Yeah.
Like it did not exist.
Right.
Right. So,
but the likelihood that you're going to, you know, cast a broad net out there and find most people, you know, right? Yeah. Most people are.
But there is a starving crowd of people who want to feel better about themselves.
Yes. Yep.
So I think that's what he's tapping into.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right. So what other goodies do you have from your swipe file friend?
Okay. Let's talk about the writing style. At no time when in reading that letter, Sean, did it sound anything from, it felt like it was coming from any company. I mean, obviously the Nancy, but it just sounds genuine. It sounds like a person's just writing you a letter, right? Yeah. Doesn't sound like it's coming from a salesperson. Nope. In fact, it's the opposite. So he uses, let's talk about this, because here's one thing that he mentions here. Readability of this letter is a grade, gives it a grade level of 8. He has 14 words, basically around 14 words per sentence, 3 words repeated 10 times. It says, Dear Mr. McDonald, did you know that your family was recorded with a coat of arms? Then let's go down to this drawing along with other information about the name has been printed. An attractive 1-page report. This entire report is documented, authentic, and printed on parchment like paper, suitable for framing. You know, my days of being in grammar or English 101 is long gone.
These are all past tense.
Exactly. It's already done.
Already happened. Already done. All the things you're not supposed to do.
Right. Exactly. Everything they told you not to do in English school or English class, English 101. The bottom line is it's a 6th to 8th grade level reading type. The other thing is scarcity. Where do you find the scarcity at?
Yeah, just a few extra copies made.
Yep. The report so delighted our friends that we have had a few extra copies made in order to share this information with other people of the same name. If you're interested, please let us know right away, as our supply is pretty slim.
Yep.
Credibility, the other thing, credibility and research. What is that social proof we talk about? Did you know that your family was recorded with a coat of arms in ancient heraldic archives more than 7 centuries ago? And then from there it says, my husband and I discovered this while doing some research for some of our friends who have the same last name as you. Wow. We've had an artist recreate the coat of arms exactly as described in the ancient records. So,
yeah, there's a lot of, this is like where every single word has weight, right?
It does. So the
heraldic archives 7 centuries ago, you know, research, artist, right? We did. Yep. It's not like we made copies. We've had an artist recreate.
Yes.
As opposed to we've had copies of the coat of arms made.
Right. Right. Which you add, it just gives more value to it because it feels like you've done a little extra.
Exactly as described in the ancient records. Mm-hmm. You know, so all these little keywords, you know, that's one of the things Mark Twain was famous for saying, the difference between the right word and the almost right word is the difference between lightning and lightning bug. Yeah,
that's great. Which is like a chasm, right? I mean, it's huge. Yeah.
So what else we got? I know you're running short on time.
Yeah. So we have the tripwire offer, which is, you know, almost the kind of like the upsell, the at the bottom. So, you know, this is like the early upsell, you know, when it comes to traditional sales copy. But he says P.S., the old P.S. at the end. Let's see. I'm trying to find it. Oh, yeah, here it is. If you are ordering only one report, send $2. Additional reports ordered at the same time and sent to the same address are $1 each. And then please make checks payable. So
50% off for the second.
You're getting a deal.
I know.
So there's the upsell right there at the very end with the old PS. And I like how he's got it at on the PS. That's a great place to put that upsell.
And this is pretty amazing because this is a letter that somebody has to sit down and write out a check and send back. Like there's no upsell sequence other than that. That's it.
Yep.
Like you don't get to like re-upsell. You can in a follow-up letter and things like that, which I'm sure he did something with the list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in this sequence, like you got to make your money back on postage from this letter.
Yep.
Which by the time you know, back then, don't know, stamps are probably what, 19 cents yeah. less? I don't know. Yeah. I can't remember what they were yeah. in the 70s, but
right.
print a you know, piece of papers. So you probably, I mean, he was probably 35 to 50 cents max, probably mm-hmm. 35 cents total for envelope, stamp, letter,
yeah,
printing. You know, so that means it had to convert pretty high in order to get, if the average order is $3 or $4, that means what, one out of five or six really need to convert just to break even?
Sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's 20%. it's pretty crazy when you start doing the math, what it must have.
And here's the big upsell at the end. So he says, so he got so obviously people send in their money. Now he's got the list of qualified buyers whom already have purchased an interest by purchasing the report. So within days of sending them their $2 or their additional dollars for the extra report, Gary would then send them a trifold catalog that offered additional products, plates, plaques, cups, all of them with the same coat of arms design. So that's where he made the money.
Yep.
On the big upsell after with the, you know, the catalog, and it had all the plates, the cups, the plaques, everything that you could get from that after you ordered the report. So the report kind of really qualified you initially. You know, you invested the $2 or more.
So like you said, as a tripwire, that first low dollar buy,
mm-hmm.
You know, which he probably didn't, I mean, probably maybe broke even.
Yep.
Maybe not.
Yep.
But you don't, you know, if you really understand marketing, you don't try to make money right at the front. You're going to make money on the back end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's what businesses, you know, we're talking to at the beginning, all of these things that, you know, you pick up at trade shows and things like that, you know, they could use things like that. I mean, they're salespeople, they're marketing people, all, you know, pick up a letter like this and look at the structure of it and get more personal. Stuff like this, that, you know, this corporate language that you get from one sheets and sales letters from other companies are horrible. And, you know, look for ways to, you know, personalize your letters, even if it's a B2B letter, even if it's business to business, look for ways to do that. Look for ways to upsell, just like he did, you know, using that tripwire method. So many good takeaways from this.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's a lot going on at the same time.
None of these sample pieces or sales pieces that I picked up at the trade shows had anything to do with, you know, go to this landing page. I've looked through all of them. None of them have a go to this landing page and order a free sample of this surface coating, right? We'll send you a free sample of it. None of them. I mean, they're just missing opportunities like this with this, you know, these glossy brochures, you know, just talking about how great their product is, and not one says, you know, go here and we'll send you a free sample, minus shipping, you know, you pay the shipping or whatever. Easy way to break even on, you know, not to not be out the cost, send them a free sample and let them test it.
It wouldn't even have to be a sample. It could be, you know, go here and get a free spec sheet for your engineer.
Sure.
Or, like, there's a lot of different ways you could do that, depending on what the next step in the sales process usually is. You know, that, or, you know, put us to the test, mm-hmm. like you said, with a sample, like, who knows?
But yeah,
nothing.
Yeah. Nope.
And instead, when you go to these trade shows, that's how most there's, and these people pay a lot of, I used to be in the trade show industry where we made trade show booths, one of the companies I worked for late 90s. I worked for a company that literally made trade show booths, and people would spend, you know, you couldn't get out of there for less than $30,000 or $40,000. And that was late 90s.
No.
And some of these companies will spend $500,000 or more on one booth for one show.
Yeah. A trade show, typical on average, a trade show booth setup is going to set you back about $20,000, $20,000.
Yeah.
You know, at a decent sized trade show.
And then whatever expenses you have for your people to get there.
Sure.
It's usually paying three or four or five people to be there, hotels, food, airline, like all that stuff. Yeah. But if it's a bigger, you know, if it's a bigger size booth, they can get really expensive really fast.
Yeah.
So.
And they spend a fortune on, you know, they get their, you know, their pens with the, you know, the nib,
the logo pins
with the, with koozies. The stylus, they got the stress balls. Let's see, I can go through a whole list of things, stress balls, pens, you know, absolutely nothing, you know, little packets of, Wipets, you know, or these little bottles of spray sanitizer with their logo. I mean, it's all this stuff that they're just spending
now.
Yeah. Yep. But you know what? You pick up the stuff and you just throw it in a bag. And then when people get home, they just kind of throw it in a desk drawer or something like that. And they never think of it again. You know,
and then 2 years later, you're going through your desk. You're like, I don't have all this stuff. And you start throwing it out.
you get rid of it. It's garbage.
I don't think I've ever called off one of those later.
The pen doesn't even write anymore. The ink's dry. I've not used it.
So,
I mean, just the lesson. I think you had some, did you have a letter or two that you wanted to mention? I've got a few minutes here.
Okay. I mean, I found a similar archive, you know, some of the famous letters. It's got a whole list of Gary Halbush letters, but, one that I thought was very interesting, and I have a story about this. It's Gary Halbert's How to Collect from Social Security at Any Age. Mm-hmm. And this was written in 1973.
Okay.
And it was an ad in, like, you know, you'd see it in something like a Money magazine or Kiplinger's or something like that, whatever was around back in the day, Fortune maybe. But what's interesting about this is, one of the places I worked that did financial copy, because a lot of people don't realize this, but copy is not, for the most part, is not copyrightable because it's sales copy.
Right.
You can't actually copyright sales copy.
Sure.
So you can borrow pretty liberally from it. it's like not encouraged, especially if it's recent, but when you get into the 20, 30 year old copy, you can just kind of take big chunks of it.
Absolutely. So anyway,
one of the places I worked that did financial stuff, that's what one guy did. He took this How to collect from Social Security at Any Age and basically used it as the basis of it was a longer promo. This was one page. Mm-hmm. So he kind of, this has about 20 different bullets on this ad. Mm-hmm. And he basically went out and just kind of blew up each bullet and kind of explained a little bit, but it became another bestseller again with the same basic angle.
Right.
And then all that. So that's one that I have personal knowledge that took a swipe, reused it, and it did just as well the second time as it did the first time.
Yeah.
So there's that kind. Look what else, you know, there of course is the famous dollar bill letter that's been used, you know, dozens of times.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
As you can see, I've attached a nice crisp dollar bill to the top of this letter. Why have I done this? Actually, there are two reasons. Like, that is everybody's knocked this letter off at one point or another. It seems like. And it kind of keeps working.
Yeah. That's a good one.
Because a dollar bill does get their attention. Some people try to cheap out and put something else on there.
Sure.
And it doesn't work as well. But it's a great lead gen piece to get people to call you back or to order something or whatever. I think usually most people now use it for a lead gen piece. I've even seen people do this online. You've probably seen this too, Jonathan, where people send you like a dollar in PayPal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so it shows up in your subject line. You have a payment from PayPal.
Yep.
But I don't know how well those work, because a lot of people would be like really skeptical about that.
Yeah.
Because it feels like phishing.
So. Yep.
But when you do it in a letter, it's, you know, it still works.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all kinds of stuff. I mean, I think the big thing here is You could just type in Gary Halbert swipe file, or Gary Halbert classic letters or something like that, and you'll come across, you know, both the place you mentioned and a couple other places where you can see a lot of his letters. You can look at his old newsletters, but this is still really good stuff. I was looking at one because I'm doing a marketing piece right now for a company that sells a weight loss thing that, you know, has a backstory of Chinese herbs. And I saw that Gary Halbert, one of the letters is, "At last, China reveals 1300-year-old stay young health secret." And I was like, oh, that's right up kind of in line. Now this was for Tai Chi, but there was a section of the copy that I could pull word for word, and I probably will. That was just really good copy.
Sure.
So, you know, you can go in and sometimes you don't need to use the whole thing or even the headline, but there may be a couple paragraphs that are just really good that you can use for the opening of your letter or the opening of a, you know, you can find other things. Cause when the copy is at this high a quality, you can pull chunks out of it.
Sure.
And those things will still resonate. Cause when they had to get it down to one page, it was gone over so many times to get exactly the right words to get it down to one page, especially these old space ads, because the space ads were, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 to run. Mm-hmm. And then you got to wait 3 months before they get published. Like, you know, it was a big gamble.
Oh yeah.
Compared to now.
Sure.
So yeah, just things like that. Just pulling sections out.
Do you use this Hemingway app in your copy? Do you run it through the Hemingway?
Okay. I don't. I usually use, I actually just use Perry Marshall on his site. He has a FK score grader. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you can just copy and paste your stuff in there. It's only really good for shorter stuff.
Sure. But
if you have Word, if you use Word docs, it's built into Word. Google hasn't done it yet. I wish Google would add it to, I haven't checked to see if there's a Chrome extension or not, but there's actually, in Word, there's a space for FK score under readability statistics, I think. Mm-hmm. And you can get you want your FK score to be between, we always try to get it less than 7.5.
Sure.
And you can, End of America, I think, was it like a sixth grade reading level when that came out 10 years ago. And that, you know, that broke all kinds of records as well.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Good stuff. All right. Well, there's some lessons right there. We'll post a link where people can find this this ad, download it, put it in your swipe file if you don't already have it, and go through it. It's a great lesson in direct response, using those tripwires, using the upsell, using the personalization, all of that stuff. Good lessons in any sales copy. So.
Yeah, and it's not that hard to do. I mean, it's harder than this letter makes it look, but it's not that hard if you sit down and do it.
But that China letter you were just mentioning, mention that headline again. What was the?
At last, China reveals her 1300-year-old stay young health secret.
You could use that. At last, China reveals this secret or this ancient secret on a number of things.
Yeah. This was for Tai Chi, but yeah, you could use it for anything that has any ties to, you know, China, any herb, any weight loss supplement that has, you know, old Chinese herbs in it.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's good stuff.
All right, guys. Well, that's a wrap. Thanks for everyone who tunes in. You can find us over at persuasionbythepint.com. You can find us on all of your podcast platform, Stitcher Radio, iHeart, Spotify, you name it. Sean, we'll see you all next week. We'll see you next week. We got guests. What's Emily? What's
Rochea, I think?
Rochea.
We'll just call her Emily.
Emily. Just say Emily. Be getting into some cool stuff with publicity and media. Should be interesting. All right. We'll see you guys next time. Thanks.